Welcome to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley. Our team's goal is to present science-based information about gardening and all things nature in New York's Hudson Valley. Host Gene and Tim, along with team members Teresa and Linda, are master gardener volunteers for New York's Columbia and Greene counties. So if you're interested in gardening or nature or nuggets of information about what's happening outside your door, settle in. Enjoy the conversation. Whatever the season, we have something to say.
Hi, welcome to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley. I'm Tim Kenalty.
And I'm Gene Thomas.
Hey, we got a great show today, don't we, Gene?
We do.
It's like a weird combination of things, but I think it's really cool. First of all, Annie is going to talk about corn, all the things you can do with corn, right?
Yeah, and I thought it was all fancy stuff, but it's not. It's stuff even I can do.
First of all, corn, when it's in season, is so delicious, and there's so many things that she's going to talk about you can do with corn.
My mother,
right?
Used to put a big old pot on the stove, and when it was boiling, she'd send us out running barefoot into the cornfield, and we'd pick the corn and haul it in and chuck it as we came
in.
What
is this, Grapes of Wrath or something we're talking about?
Pretty much, but we don't have to do that anymore.
I was just excited to do the photo for this episode, pulling an ear of corn out of my refrigerator to photograph it. So there you go, right? So you're talking in this episode too, right?
Yeah, one of my pet peeves.
What's that?
Acronyms.
Oh, what
even
kind of
a
acronyms?
Word is annoying.
Give me an example.
Okay, AVID. You know what AVID is?
I do, but probably a lot of people don't.
That's right. We're going to find out. And another thing that really annoys me, because it doesn't describe what it does, is CRISP.
Yeah, there are a lot of acronyms, you're right.
Yeah, right. So we get into that.
And Dee Dee and Jackie are back. We love Dee Dee and Jackie, right?
We love them.
They're going to talk about one of my favorite things around the house, and probably everybody else's too, right? Fruit flies.
Fruit flies.
The worst, right?
And fungus gnats.
I don't even know what a fungus gnat is. So
well, everybody thinks they're the same thing, but they're not.
They're really not wonderful to have in your house, so I can't wait to hear about that.
It's
I hope they're going to talk about how to get rid of them, right?
They do mention that.
Oh, good. Yeah. Okay. So, wow, I can't wait.
Yeah, come on, let's go heat up that corn and sit down and watch the show.
My name's Annie Skibinski. I'm a master gardener, volunteer, and a member of the Nature Calls podcast team. On today's episode of Patch to Plate, I'm going to talk about corn. I think of grilled corn on the cob with a light touch of butter and sprinkled with salt as one of the iconic tastes of summer. Even if you don't grow your own, our farm stands and stores offer such an abundant opportunity to source fresh corn, you should really take advantage of it. The first corn accompaniments that come to my mind were butter and salt. Let me mention a few others that pair great with corn. Basil. Peppers, both chili peppers and bell peppers. Mushrooms are great with corn. Onions, garlic, olive oil, stocks too. Citruses go well with corn, particularly lemon and lime. And cream. Creamed corn. You love that. Beyond those big voices that sing so sweetly with the flavors of corn are bacon, cayenne, celery, cheddar, chives, cilantro, crab, shrimp, dill, potatoes, thyme, tomatoes. Besides the lemon and lime that I mentioned, corn pairs well with the acidic notes of vinegars, vinaigrettes, and dry white wine. I'm not sure what's in your pantry or refrigerator, but I typically have a lot of these ingredients on hand. To enjoy the rich, caramelized, sugary, and smoky flavors of grilled corn and the benefits of cooking over an open fire, you have to remove or pull back the husks from the corn. If you grill your corn with the husks covering the kernels, in effect, you're steaming the corn. That's okay if you want steamed corn, but to get the benefits of grilling, the kernels should be uncovered. Either way you go, you want to pull back the husks and remove the silk before you cook it. If you want to leave yourself a built-in handle, you can leave the husks on, pull them back, tie them together with a piece of butcher's twine, or use a twisty tie. Brush the corn with a little olive oil or melted butter and put the corn on the grill over high heat. To prevent the husks from burning, you can place a shield of foil between the grill and the corn husks. You can char your corn and develop some of that caramel sweetness by cooking it in a piping hot cast iron pan, too. Don't use any oil in the pan. Just get it hot, put the corn in the pan, either the shucked cobs or kernels. Just let them sit and brown a bit. If you have cobs in the pan, you can turn them with tongs. For kernels, just stir them around with a wooden spoon. I think we tend to think of corn strictly as an American treasure, and it is native to the Americas. Archaeologists even found popcorn in Utah and Peru that they can date back over 1,000 years, far longer than it's been in the sofa cushions at your house. In fact, corn's a popular food worldwide. Last year, the National Agricultural Library hosted a 3-part webinar series that highlighted global food staples and the intersections of global cuisines with our USDA research, social science, and history. The program focused on maize and corn in its past, present, and future role in food, culture, and society. Fortunately, the series was recorded, and a link is in the show notes so you can watch the series if you missed it. Anyway, 3 very accomplished chefs are featured in the series, and I've included a link to their recipes, too. They offer up the ingredients and methods for preparing several dishes, including popcorn-crusted salmon, sweet corn puree, and fire-roasted corn salad. And there's other recipes you'll find there, too. The fire-roasted corn salad would be a great staple on the dinner table every evening that fresh ingredients are in season. Here's how to put it together. Grill a couple of ears of corn until charred. When cool enough to handle, cut the kernels off. Dice a plum tomato and half of a medium red onion. Mince up some cilantro. Put the corn in a bowl. Mix in the other ingredients. And squeeze the juice of a ripe lime over the mix. Season it with a good bit of salt to taste. You can put that out on the table right then, or you can prep ahead of time, cover it, refrigerate it. Give the flavors a chance to melt. Either way, it's going to be enjoyable. You'll see from the link for this recipe that it calls for a Roma tomato, and that's a good choice. But use any plum tomato that you have on hand. We typically have both San Marzano and Amish paste in the garden. The plums have a dense flesh with less moisture and tend to have fewer seeds than other tomatoes. Oops, I went down the garden path by the tomatoes. Back to corn. Wildly popular at present are several variations of Mexican corn. On the cob, it's called elote. Off the cob and in a bowl, it's called esquites. For the elote, the corn is grilled and then coated with a mixture of crema, roll in a crumbled cotija cheese, sprinkle with chili powder, and drizzled with a squeeze of lime, then rolled in chopped cilantro. You can find the cotija in larger markets, but if you can't find the crema, consider substituting a 50-50 mix of mayo and sour cream. Or you could even lighten the recipe further by substituting Greek yogurt. Not to get too far from the original recipe, but if I have feta on hand, I'm more likely to substitute that for the cotija than to make a trip to the market. I've included an esquites recipe for serving this delicious mix in a bowl. This works best when finger food isn't part of your dining plan. You know, vegetables are best when they're as fresh as possible, and it's especially true with corn. It has a high sugar content, and as it ages, the sugars in the kernels turn to starch. This mutes the flavor, and it affects the texture when it's cooked. Corn is enjoyed across the world in some form every season. Today we focused on fresh corn, but there are scads of resources on how to use it throughout the year, dried, frozen, popped, or fermented. And if you want to grow your own next season, the Cornell Vegetable Guide to Vegetables for New York Growers lists early corn, mid-season corn, late corn, popcorn. It lists white corn, yellow corn, bicolor corn. Not to be too corny, but check out the guide. There's a lot of growing advice there about corn. I've added a link to the Utah Extension that provides information about preserving corn, which includes freezing, canning, and pickling guidance. For other recipes, you can go to our Cornell website. The Master Gardener Volunteers Cookbook contains recipes for garden salsa as well as corn chowder, both helping to bring the garden or fresh farm taste of corn to the table. You can call the office if you'd like to buy a copy. Enjoy. That's it for this edition of From Patch to Plate. I'm Annie Skibinski.
You're listening to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley. Stay tuned for It's All Greek to Me.
Hi, this is Jean Thomas, Master Gardener Volunteer for Columbia and Greene Counties, Cornell Cooperative Extension. Welcome to another round of It's All Greek to Me, a regular feature of Nature Calls Conversations from the Hudson Valley. As promised last time, we're looking at acronyms today. They're one of my admittedly many pet peeves. Just for fun, we'll dissect the word into its Latin roots. Acro means from the extremities, as from the initials of words in this case. Nim, of course, means name. So an acronym is a word formed from the first letters of a series of words. This may have been born as a continuation of the common usage of the words homonym, synonym, antonym, etc. Apparently, wide use of acronyms only developed in the 20th century, but it has certainly become rampant. Oh, here's a digression. If the letters are sounded out, as in AT&T or AMPM, that's not an acronym. It's called initialism. If you're still unclear, here are some common acronyms: SCUBA, RADAR, LASER, and my personal favorite, Yahoo. All right, here goes. RADAR is radio detecting and ranging. SCUBA is self-contained underwater breathing apparatus. LASER is light amplification by stimulated emission of radiation. And Yahoo is yet another hierarchically organized oracle. Don't you love it? So now we have the idea. Here goes. By the way, many government agencies have to post lists of acronyms and initialisms they use, and there are dozens of the lists online. I'm going to start with AVID. This particular acronym means Assessing Vegetation Impacts from Deer. Okay, there are many programs scattered around the web called AVID. They mean a bunch of different things. Our particular one that has to do with deer is a New York State invention of the Department of Environmental Conservation and Cornell University, along with the SUNY College of Environmental Science and Forestry. The AVID program is a citizen scientist collaboration between professional foresters and researchers to measure the damage done by deer to both public and private forests. Volunteers and landowners are trained to assess the health of the forests and submit information to a central database. Although this is a New York State program, it is being considered in several other states, so it has the potential to be useful over an even larger area. Ultimately, there will be an app available for reporting data into the database. While the program focuses on collecting information about deer specifically and their effect on the environment, larger issues will inevitably be addressed as the program continues. Climate change and habitat loss will be addressed. The potential power of citizen scientists and homeowners to assess and ultimately mitigate their environment is enormous. It's a wonderful program. Another acronym that gets tossed around freely by ecologists is CRISP. Here, too, Google will offer a ton of choices besides the ecologically oriented one we want to learn about. Ours is very special. Not only is it an acronym, but it's one of a family of acronyms. The CRISP we hear about in our area stands for Catskill Regional Invasive Species Partnership. That does not mean we're partnering with the invasives, but against. CRISP includes several local counties and parts of some others, all, of course, in the Catskill region. It gets better for acronym fans. New York is divided into 8 regions called, get ready for this, PRISMS, Partnerships for Regional Invasive Species Management. Each PRISM has its own acronym or regional name. So what does all this do, you ask? Well, it's a big network established to combat the many invasive plants, insects, and animals that are coming into the state and threatening much of the agricultural and home horticulture. The PRISMS educate the public and track the progress of these dangerous invaders. Wherever you live in the state, you can find your regional PRISM with a wealth of information that may well affect you directly. You can start at nyis.info. We'll be looking at other acronyms in the future. In my opinion, a really good acronym lets you know what it's about immediately. Others are designed to make up a familiar word with the idea to make it memorable. Well, I'm unimpressed with the recognition factor of the words avid and crisp, signifying their missions. Both are worth the effort to investigate further, as they represent some really good ideas and information to help improve the condition of our Hudson Valley and beyond. Ideas you and I can implement from our own homes and gardens. That's all for now.
You're listening to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley. Stay tuned for Pests and Pathogens.
Hello, and welcome back to another segment of Pests and Pathogens. I'm Jackie.
And I'm Dee Dee Thorpe.
Today, we decide to talk about fungus gnats and fruit flies. What's the difference? I always thought they were just different names for the same insect, and it showed up in different places.
Well, let's start with fruit flies. If you have elderly bananas, you might have fruit flies darting around. There are actually several species of fruit flies. The most common is the Drosophila melanogaster. If that name sounds familiar, they are very popular with scientists who use them extensively in genetic research. Fruit flies are indeed flies. Their size is between 1 and 2 millimeters, and they're kind of slow flyers. They tend to hover around the fruit they're attracted to. Jackie, where do they come from?
They're most often brought into your house on the skin of the fruit you bought at the market. The eggs are invisible to the naked eye and have to have a terrific sense of smell. So the parents are in the warehouse and the orchards, naturally. And of course, they will lay their eggs anywhere they think they will survive. We bring home fruit from the market, and the eggs are hatched. The newborn flies seek out the ripest fruit and they'll look for a feast. But they are different from fungus gnats. Do they look different?
Yes, they have fat bodies, like many flies, and they're really small. They're easy enough to control without resorting to chemicals. You can just wipe down the skin of the fruit when you bring it home before you put it into a bowl. Or if you want to make a trap, you can recycle a plastic container with a lid, poke a few holes in the lid with a toothpick, and bait the trap with a little piece of banana peel. The little guys can't figure out how to get back out, and you've trapped them. About 24 hours usually catches the whole population. That's when you take the trap outside and release them, away from the house. Oh, and kids love this, by the way. Okay, so then what are fungus gnats? Aren't they flies too?
Yes, they are, but the name can be confusing. Gnats are related to flies, but are generally considered biting insects. Fungus gnats are not a biting insect. They belong to a whole genus of fly. The Latin name is Seyrdae, and they are several genera and species. The ones that are interested in are the ones that you see around your house plants. At first glance, they look like fruit flies, but they're distant cousins. But if you look more closely, they look more like tiny mosquitoes, 1/4 inch long. Their cycle is different from fruit flies, too.
We are most familiar with the little guys that hang around our houseplants. They look like really, really tiny mosquitoes, fly like gnats, and they're named after and seem to be attracted to light. It's like they want us to notice them. The flying stage isn't even the stage that causes the damage. It just makes us crazy. It's the larva form that lives in the soil that can be harmful. Fortunately, they rarely cause significant harm to the roots, and they're pretty easy to get rid of. There are yellow sticky traps. These are the bright yellow squares of cardboard that you hang on a little stick in the flower pot. The flies are attracted and get stuck on the trap. A full reproductive cycle can be as quick as a month with overlapping generations. It helps to make sure the soil dries out between watering. A top layer of fine sand or gravel can help keep the top of the soil too dry for egg laying. Too damp soil is their ideal habitat. If there is a persistent infestation, even with these corrections, there are approved chemicals. Use them sparingly, follow the instructions, and don't spray into the air. Be especially aware of them when you bring the plants indoors from a summer outside and when you purchase plants from a retailer. These are the opportunities for the wild population to lay eggs before the plant even arrives inside.
That's it for this segment. As always, ccecolumbiagreen.org will bring you to our website for more help. Thanks for joining us.
That concludes another episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. We would like to thank Sandra Linnell and Devin Connolly from Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties for production support. And a special thank you to our listeners for joining us on this episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. You can find links to any of the topics mentioned in this episode at our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org. Comments and suggestions for future topics may be directed to us at columbiagreenmgb@cornell.edu or on the CCE Master Gardener Volunteers of Columbia and Greene Counties Facebook page. For more information about Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties, visit our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org or visit us in Hudson or in Acre. Cornell Cooperative Extension provides equal programming and employment opportunities.